slightly more infectious than the original COVID-19, which plays a part in the problems of people earlier suggesting that if 70% of the population was immune with a vaccine, we'd have herd immunity. The trouble is that when that Delta variant popped up, it kind of screwed up that idea. Let me drop for a sec. So Thursday, I think, they made the first announcement that in South Africa, occasionally they will do a genetic analysis of the viruses in sick people. They found a new mutation, which they didn't name at the time. They designated it the way that they had in the past with numbers and letters and such, which no one remembers. Later Thursday night, they decided to give it its own Greek letter in the alphabet, which is Omicron. So here we have the Omicron variant. The Omicron variant has approximately 50 different mutations from the baseline version. 30 of those mutations are occurring where the spike protein is made. So it's a little bit different in the spike protein, but there are a bunch of little differences elsewhere in the viral coding. Science does not know what that means yet. It sort of at this point depends on whether you're optimist or pessimist. The early findings of this virus was found in relatively young people in South Africa and other places in that area around South Africa, and they had mild infections. It might be because of happenstance that it affected a young community, and so it did not demonstrate the virulence that that Delta and others have had. Or it could be that it's just not as bad. It's just a mutation for mutation's sake. There are other mutations. There are mu. There are a bunch of them, but we haven't really concerned ourselves because they are not more infective and they are not more mortality and such. The overwhelming variant that has taken over the world is basically Delta. So far, again, they found it in South Africa and regions around there. They have found it in the Netherlands and Israel, basically from people who've recently traveled in that area. There are no known cases at this point, to my knowledge, in the United States. Everyone is very scared. Everyone is very worried. And they're taking the worst-case scenario approach for the time being until actual research studies demonstrate whether there's any additional risk with the Omicron variant. So anyone got any questions about that, please feel free to ask.
KATUTF for the comment.
Yes. What is your comment?
The good thing is that this variant can be detected with a PCR test, so its prevalence and spread will be more easily assessed. And the fear, of course, is the spike protein, which would theoretically give it the opportunity to adhere to the, you know, to the cells once it enters the body. So that's the fear, because the potentiality for it to evade the current vaccine is there. However, I think both Pfizer and Moderna have announced that they'll be able to produce a vaccine that will address the new variant within about 100 days.
Okay, I mean, they also made a similar announcement about early variants and then decided that the difference in vaccine response was so minimal that they apparently no longer talk about it. So I think this is the same case, that yes, there is a possibility, there always is a possibility that mutations can evade detection by previous vaccination material. But again, it's utterly, totally unproven. It's kind of worst-case scenario, and the pharmaceutical companies are kind of acting upon that, that, worst comes to worst, they can crank up their machines that downloaded the genetic sequences of the early COVID-19 and do their magic all over again. It's going to take time and studies to understand whether whether this new variant warrants that type of modification of the vaccines. So we're, again, very early. People are taking worst-case scenarios. I can understand why. Any other comments or questions out there on this particular subject?
KD2, WOT, Chris.
Yes, Chris.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Roy. The question is, how long do you expect it might be before we would know whether or not the vaccinations that we currently have, which the mRNA vaccinations, which, you know, key on the spike proteins, how long do you think before we would know if the current vaccines are effective? Thank you.
Well, it depends upon we'll kind of first get preliminary research on the subject. My guess is they're going to comb through hospitals in the South Africa area to genetically type more people and get a better picture of who has what and what their medical course has been. And a lot of backtracking in areas where they find a significant number of people with that variant. And then, unfortunately, as the variant inevitably spreads, because all variants, unfortunately, spread to one degree or another, there will be more studies in more countries of a statistical nature to figure out what's the incidence of people who were fully vaccinated, partially vaccinated, never vaccinated. Most of the people who were found to have this variant in South Africa, the way they phrased it was some of them had partially been vaccinated. One of the big problems that the first world has is that, I understand it, we're a wealthy country, we have a lot of infrastructure, we can afford to give everyone their two shots and a booster shot and maybe another shot. And we're not that generous in giving the third world their first shots. So there's a lot of people in South America and Africa who haven't had a vaccine or had a partial vaccine, and they're just a petri dish waiting to cook a mutation of the virus that is totally insensitive to the vaccine. So we kind of risk ourselves by being selfish. I took the booster myself. I advise people to take the booster, but we're kind of topping off an almost full tank while a lot of countries are suffering from complete neglect as far as proper vaccinations are concerned. So it serves our purpose to have the rest of the world vaccinated as well. There'll be less chance of variants. If you remember, Delta came from India. That was under-vaccinated, and this one comes from South Africa, which is under-vaccinated.
And Y2H?
Yes, Lou.
So what I heard on the news, and my understanding is probably in a week or 2 weeks, they may know the efficacy of the current vaccines we're using. Apparently, and I don't know how they got this already, but they'll take an antigen, and they'll take antibodies which were a result of the vaccine, antibodies which were a result of the original infection, and they challenge them with the antigen, and they see if the antibodies are neutralizing. So if they find that the antibodies that are produced from the current vaccines we're using are neutralizing, then they'll let us know that. That means they'll be pretty much effective, maybe not totally effective, but somewhat. I also heard that the companies, the vaccine companies, do have the, I guess, the DNA, and they can make new RNA vaccines tailored to this particular mutant or variant, which has like 32 different changes on the spike protein, some of which are in the binding domain, which is the, really the area that, that binds to the ACE receptors.
Yeah, it's relatively simple. I mean, that's how we know all about the variant, is because they were able to rather quickly genetically run the whole thing and see where there's a mismatch of the baseline genetic code. And by the way, coronaviruses are RNA viruses. A lot of viruses use RNA as their inherited, genetic material. Most eukaryotic cells use DNA, but viruses are very simple, not quite really alive parasites that usually amount to a little bundle of RNA encapsulated with a protein and a mechanism to get into cells and little else. They undermine the entire mechanism of our cells to manufacture themselves.
K-A-T-U-T-O.
Yes.
It was my impression that they already determined that there was a somewhat diminished neutralizing capability from the antibodies in this case.
Well, the way I heard it, it was cautious conjecture on their part. I do not, and I'm not aware of any actual research that demonstrated it. It sounded the way I haven't seen any real good literature. It's all been through journalists, and nothing that I've heard from them sounds like it comes from any research facility, more the concerns of researchers.
Well, I wonder what they're basing those suspicions on.
I assume pessimism, but again, because the journalists don't kind of share that aspect of what's going on with the researchers, I don't have a clue. Unless the researchers themselves publish something or have a press release of some form, we have to unfortunately go by the intermediaries of the press.
Or they're doing a stepwise preparation of the populace for worse news to follow.
Is increased virulence or not is another factor. It may not be, unless you're pessimistic again, but that'll come out in the studies, studies of cases coming up. So that then we'll figure that out.
AC2GS. Yeah, I would agree with you, Lou. I think, unfortunately, people's attitude is kind of like a pendulum. They go from optimism to pessimism to optimism to pessimism. I think it's reasonable, rational, and understandable that researchers are kind of pessimistic these days. Everyone's been kind of smacked silly, and that kind of leaves a little bit of a scar psychologically on people. I am sure there are going to be many physicians after this is all over who will run from their profession and decide to sell flowers or something for a living instead of the health field. It's really knocked the heck out of a lot of health providers and different areas in the country that started to turn on them and threaten them probably don't help the burnout.
K-A-T-U-T-F, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to agree with you that, vaccinating the rest of the world is not necessarily an act of charity on our part, but of self-interest, obviously. I think that they were conjecturing that there was some case in South Africa which had a very long-standing chronic infectation of the virus, which gave it the opportunity to mutate and develop into a better version of itself. Better meaning, of course, more capable of eluding our defenses. And that's what, you know, I mean, if you want to give the virus a personality, this is what viruses do. They seek to propagate themselves, you know, in any which way they possibly can. But that being aside, the earlier conversation of superconductivity was interesting to me, and I guess it must have come up from a topic from last week. I don't know, I wasn't here. But then it seemed that you got off the idea of superconductivity, which was, you know, interesting to me. I'm not an expert at these things, but the idea of, you know, the ejection of magnetic lines of force when you reach the superconductive state, or the Meissner effect, as it's called. I was hoping you would get into that kind of a dialogue.
Oh, okay. The point was at the time, Lou was commenting on last week. We did an interesting discussion of how electrical energy is transferred from a battery or a generator to a load, and most people tend to generally think of it as terms of electrons flow through a conductor and they reach the load, and that's that. Aside from the fact that the actual electrons travel very, very slow, it's called electron drift, and it's things like millimeters, inches per hour, depending upon the current. It's through electromagnetic fields, and Lou was bringing up the observation of whether superconducting materials work on the level of electromagnetic waves or if there's something else going on. Now, when you talk about trapping of magnetic fields, that's one of the problems with the type 1 and type 2 superconductors. Type 1 superconductors do this in a different way than type 2. In type 2, I believe that different lines of flux get through and gets trapped, and that's where you start to see these interesting U-tubes where people are just having levitation effects occurring above the superconductor. With a neodymium magnet, because of the effect of superconductors on lines of magnetic fields. So, you know, superconductors are fascinating subjects. They're very quantum mechanically described. Unfortunately, I've never seen a good layman's description. You know, other than just telling you that they're a Cooper pair of electrons that are coupled with each other. Beyond that point, it gets very, very quantum mechanical and gets very hairy.
Yeah, it's very interesting to me because I have other areas of study that might, you know, be affected by it. But just, you know, I don't have a deep electromagnetic knowledge of things, but what I'm curious about is theoretically, if you reach that that cooling point, that critical point in which a superconductivity can occur in a material, and theoretically you have a current flowing through it, shouldn't it say you have a loop of it, and it wouldn't it seemingly go on forever without any force continuing?
Well, yes, you would have a constant electric current running through a loop of wire. This is one of the reasons why when people have to power down a nuclear magnetic resonance imaging devices, they have to quench the superconductor. A lot of the change in the circuit current induces a lot of back current in the device. So it's a, you know, it's a dangerous move to quench a superconductor because of these currents that perpetuate, because there's no resistance to stop them.
Of course, that makes sense if there's zero resistance. Okay, that's about, I've exhausted my question load there. I am getting a like a taxi service on top of my copy on the repeater. I don't know if that's local to me or other people are hearing it.
Is NY2A?
Yes, Lou.
Hearing it.
Yes, Lou, you wanted to say something, and George, if you want to talk after Lou. Yeah, I'm hearing static. I'm hearing a triggering of the repeater, all kinds of curious things.
It's one of those mics that gets a dee-dee-dee-dee every time you unkey it, typical of some sort of service.
And K2WOT. It's coming from, so if you're hearing it on that, so it's on the input. It's two guys talking at 146835.
Thank you.
Yeah, alrighty. For the machine. Thanks for that report. NY2H.
Okay, very good. Thanks for the report. You know, in the old days when I had three UHF VHF antennas instead of two, I would run my flex simultaneously, and I would look at the whole band. Now I'm just down to two antennas, unfortunately, something I guess I'll correct this coming spring. But thanks for letting me know, and thanks, UTF, for the subject. I would love to figure out a way to explain a bunch of things that I can't really figure out a simple way of explaining. Smith charts. You can explain Smith charts to electrical engineers without a problem. The trick is to explain Smith charts to people who don't really know what they are yet, and especially over the radio. And sort of the same thing with superconductors. It's a fascinating subject. It's very theoretical. There's a lot of still confusion remaining. And, you know, people are feverishly trying to find the Holy Grail, a superconducting material that operates anywhere near room temperature, because it's going to be a game changer for technology if we're ever able to do that.
Yeah, and then there's superfluidity, a whole other related topic.
Well, superfluidity is a kind of different topic. It's also quantum mechanical in nature. It's a Bose condensate, if you will. It basically a whole bunch of atoms, their wave functions that kind of define it in quantum mechanical terms, merge together, and it becomes one big fluidic atom with all kinds of curious side effects. That it goes right through things, and it climbs up and down things, and it just acts very quantum mechanically, which is to say, very non-macroscopic world. You know, what we perceive as reality is not really what's going on a quantum level. When you add up the trillions and trillions of quantum mechanical things going on simultaneously, they tend to emerge in a way that we are comfortable with the normal way that the world works. But if you look at them in teeny tiny bits, it's very confusing.
Yeah, boy, I tell you that interference is annoying. Let me see if I have it. It's analogous or, you know, zero viscosity, zero resistance, zero friction, you know, things going in one direction with absolutely no contrary or contravailing force.
Well, yeah, I could see where you would draw that parallel. In the case of superfluidity, it's more as though the whole thing is sort of merging into one unit, and they're all behaving the same, and so they can't rub up against each other because they're all the same. So there's no viscosity, there's no resistance, there's all kinds of nothingness going on. Whereas superconductivity, which is capable at much higher temperatures than superfluidity, is a special case that only applies to a few electrons on the outer surface of crystal lattices of superconducting material at those temperatures.
Looking here on the, now that I thought about it, I took a look on the web, and they call it an egoless state of superflow. Egoless.
Well, I don't know if I would call it, physicists are always fun. It's a loss of individuality, which is also kind of anthropomorphizing things. It basically, many become one. So under those circumstances, a lot of interactions don't occur because you can't really interact with yourself. So a lot of characteristics that we take for granted, because a lot of them are interactions, disappear. I guess if they had an ego, the Bose condensate would be a superfluidity would be an egoless. It anthropomorphizes quantum states a little too much for my taste.
Boy, these guys are really spilling over into the frequency. It makes it almost uncopyable. K2UTF.
Yeah, I don't know why this is happening tonight. I'm sure there have been nights when that repeater was operating and we were operating at the same time. Lou, do you got any ideas why is this night different than any other night?
I don't know if I can come in. Can you? Probably not, Ralph.
Well, when these guys shut up occasionally, I can actually hear you. But apparently, they're really talking heavy over there on that repeater. It's a little bit better. It's noisier, but it has less of the interruptions. Yes, George?
Yeah, I agree with Lou. I'm hearing them also. They're actually just working the input frequency.
Somebody should get on there and talk to them.
But it's actually not really on 850 out. It's round 845, somewhere around there.
Kind of set up where you can get on there and ask them to move.
KD2FIU, they're working 146835, and they're simplex on 146835.
You think you could talk to them?
They don't want to hear it.
Do they sound like they're licensed?
Simplex. They're causing it to be heard.
know that.
Well, are they throwing out their call sign or not? My guess would be they're not. This isn't, you know, almost everyone knows this is not a simplex frequency. So there's something malicious going on. I don't know how much of it is maliciousness and how much of it is just plain old stupidity.
Yeah, I'm not listening long enough. I'm listening to 10 seconds, 15 seconds at a time, so I'm not getting calls.
I doubt it's malicious, but it's certainly not legitimate.
It's very erratic. Obviously, those guys are chopping into your audio. They're probably chopping into mine. It's only when the guys take a breath do I hear any of you.
KD2FIU.
Yeah, I hear your call sign, George, but that's about all that I can hear. Can you twirl over to that frequency and see if you could make contact with these guys? You know, just in case they're not malicious.
Yeah, 146.835 is a repeater output frequency. I can't tell if I hear a signature tone at this time. I cannot tell that. Can you catch me, Roy?
Yes, they must have paused to breathe.
Roy, pump it up. Work simplex with me. We can do it. Pump it up. AC2GS, KD2FIU.
Okay, this is me at maximum power. How do you hear me? Okay, this is AC2GS. Are you listening to me? This is kind of maximum without my overthrusters. If you want, I'll turn up my amplifier and blast you with at 200 watts, 150 really.
Okay, I got you. I heard you. And I'm listening to them. They're coming on 146.835.8. Between 835 and 840, and I cannot hear the repeater signature that would be coming in. There is a repeater on 835. I don't know whether we're just dealing with some locals who took that over, or I don't know if we're dealing with just conditions right now. Did you catch that, Roy?
Might be conditions. I thought about that.
Yeah, but it's still, you know, at 835, it shouldn't collide with us at 850. So it might be conditions plus someone's radio is broken.
I think input frequency is the key. Let me show you the input frequency. I don't know that they be on the...
KD2FIU, if all of you guys are hearing this, that means they're keying up the repeater, without a doubt. So I'm going to go over to Simplex and fish it out. KD2FIU.
Yeah.
Well, that stopped for a while. Can anyone hear me out there?
Got you loud and clear, Roy. It is coming in on 835.
Okay, but again, there's something else going on because there is a repeater. I'm aware of it. It's 146-835. Not used a great deal, but used occasionally. And I'm sure that I heard it active while Limark was active. So the two shouldn't be interrupting each other. There's enough of a band gap between 835 and 850 that the FM signal shouldn't be interfering with each other. So there's something else in this equation that we're missing. I just heard, do you copy, Roy? That's the only thing I could make out.
KD2LUOT.
Yes, Chris.
Yeah, I went down there. They won't acknowledge me. I don't know. I tried Simplex.
Okay, I mean, theoretically, it could be that these are propagation conditions and these guys could be operating somewhere far away and something is ducting them straight into the repeater in some way that it shouldn't because it's 835, not 850, or it's just a couple of malicious guys doing some kind of trick that they think is fascinating.
KD2FIU, Roy?
Yes, George.
Okay, they're working on 835, and they're not working with CTCSS tones.
One guy's name is Carmine. I can't remember his call.
Okay, they're not working with CTCSS tones, so they're not really. Then either they open their repeater to annoy us, or they're working simplex on that frequency. KD2FIU, observation.
Okay, thank you, George. Chris, if you find Carmine's call sign, let me know.
Well, the best I can do is go there and jam them. No, I'm not going to do that.
No, the dark side of the force is a seductive one. You should stay away from it.
Yeah, I know. I'm not going to do that, KD2FIU.
Yes, for that 2-second interval between them doing whatever they're doing.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there and jam them. I'm just listening and reporting.
Okay, very good. There are some times where I think back to the military with their drones, and sometimes it would be nice to have one of those drones. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, let me fish around this and see if I can find exact frequency. I'm finding it on 1446835 on my receive. Let me see if it's really just a harmonic. Are they working another band? I don't know.
Well, I've had experience with my 10-meter net where we're doing our thing, and all of a sudden I hear some voice, and I hunt it down on my flex, and I realize that the guy is on 11 meters, and his amplifier is so dirty that his harmonics are just going straight up to 10 meters. So, you know, it's possible that this is some guy with a kind of nonlinear amplifier going at a slightly different frequency, and he's just harmonizing all over the place.
KD2FRU?
Yes, George.
Is it a working simplex, or they opened up the repeater with no tone in on the 146.85 out? That repeater, either it's open tone or they're working simplex. KD2FIU.
Okay. I mean, unfortunately, if anyone has a solution to this, I think we're kind of screwed until they get bored with listening to each other and stop doing whatever they're doing.
I don't recall, but on Nets we might we have the tone shut off for the net.
Oh, okay. I do not know. I mean, you guys can program the controller and such. So, maybe that's the solution. If the PL tone was turned off, to please turn it back on.
Narrow deviation for receive, KD2FRU.
They are definitely to the west because not.
KD2FRU, they're running extremely wide also. I bring myself down to listen at only 800. They're transmitting on 865. And I still hear them when I'm listening at a 4 to 3 deviation. I got an ICOM, I got a 7100, and I'm trimming this, and I'm watching it.
Okay, I mean that makes sense. They're not transmitting with the usual bandwidth that all of us use. They're using a much wider bandwidth that's getting into the 850 frequency range enough to screw up everything. So that's consistent, at least.
Yes, and I'm hearing different types of Roger beeps going with it. I mean, the only thing I can do from here is go on the output. On the output to where they are, which is going to hurt you guys with the output or the repeater, and I don't want to do that. I can go on the output and start telling them that they're interfering, but I don't know if that's it, because it may be condition. It may be tropospheric conditions. KD2FRU.
Yes. Well, if you hear me, George, I would agree with you that probably what's going on is they're not hearing us. It's a one-way duct, our wonderful luck. But you know, as long as I can't think of anything better to do. So If you're inclined to do that, go on their frequency and see if you can get a response from them. My guess is that they will not respond, either because they don't hear you or they're malicious. But give it a try. What the hell? What do we got to lose?
I think they're moving to 220, Roy.
Oh, thank God.
KD2FIU. Okay, I'm extremely narrow now. My entire deviation is 5. 5. My received deviation is 2.5 in each direction, and I don't hear them anymore. KD2FIU, I'll be listening. Okay, I hear them. They're coming back. They don't like me. NY2HKD2FIU.
Hi, George.
Lou, are you hearing all of this coming through the repeater on the east end?
N2QEN, that's his call.
Somebody said his crew, beat that, K2SCP.
Yeah, I heard they say it's a Karman N2QEN. I'm looking at his QRZ page.
He's in the car.
Well, anyone out there hear me? Hopefully they've gone away. If not, maybe, I don't know, maybe they decided to do something else with their lives. Anyone hear me out there?
Frequency KD2FIU. I'm just going to go to the output frequency KD2FIU. Roy, did you hear that?
No, negative. I heard the noise from these guys.
Lou, did you hear that? I'm going to work the output frequency.
Which hour? Okay, guys. Hopefully they signed off. Everyone, hear me now. Yeah, that's my choice. That was a repeater output, and it had. I heard the ID fast. I heard BS in the call, so I'm gonna see if I can trace that. But yeah, so it was the output that. That's why they didn't respond.
One of them was N2JUX.
Yeah, I think he's located in New Jersey. Andy, WA2CDL, is trying to listen for the repeater full ID. He thinks it's a New Jersey-based repeater.
Okay, it's N2QEN. He was on the West Side Highway, and he was working on 146.835 out. He was 15 kilohertz wide.
Well, that was the repeater output that you heard, and I think BS, no pun intended, is in that call. So I'm going to look at Jersey repeaters and see if I get a call with a 2BS in it.
Okay, the repeater on 146.835 is open. No CTCSS tone, no PO in. It's open. I can key it wide open, and they weren't using the repeater. They were running high power on the west side of Manhattan.
I heard the ID over them. I heard the ID over them. So, all right, I'm going to look.
K1AMR.
KD2FIU, I did what I could. Hey, Roy, over to you. It's your net.
Okay. Jonathan, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, the other call sign I heard on the frequency that was causing interference was N2JUF. And that was the other gentleman in Manhattan, and I agree with the assessment that was a simplex exchange probably happening in New York City. K1AMR.
Okay, well, hopefully they've quieted down for the night. They had their little conversation. It screwed us for about 45 minutes, but that too will pass. So thanks, Jonathan. Thanks for everyone who suffered through this nonsense. Hopefully we can go back to the normally scheduled programming. I believe we had just finished chatting about superconductors. So anyone out there with any comments or questions or what have you, please feel free. Also, just want to answer a few people who remarked that Echo Link and my stream were loud and clear. That makes sense because it's coming directly from me, so there's no way for these jokers to interfere with my audio signal through the stream and through the usual pathways. So that answers that. But anyone out there with a question, please feel free to key up and give me your first name and your call sign.
NY2H for the Talbot.
Yes, Lou.
All right. I identified the repeater. It's NJ2BS, the Pearl River, New Jersey. And it's got an output of 146.835. Those guys were going through that machine. And it's probably conditioned. NJ2BS, 136.835 at Pearl River.
Okay, I guess we'll just have to hope that history doesn't repeat itself.
KD2WOT.
Their tone was open. They had no tone at all, Lou.
Okay, a bunch of people tripled and quadrupled with each other. Chris, you wanted to say something?
Take it that way. According to Repeatable here, it says the tone is 151.4. There are some other machines on that frequency. One is Manahawkin, but that's even further. That's 127.3 PL. Eagleville, Scranton, New Jersey. Okay, here it is. No, it's not. There's a Scranton machine that's 136.5, but I definitely heard the call with the BS in it, and sure enough, I found NJ2BS. So I'm sure that's the machine they were on. Whether we're open or not, we might be opened up, as they said, because we're in net mode. So we may be opened up. I can't get into Glen Oaks right now. And that would explain them getting in, if we're opened up for the net. But they were definitely on the Pearl River machine.
WS2N?
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, I found something similar to what Lou found. It's NJ2BB. I don't know if it's the same one as the word battleship. That would be it, BS. I'm not sure if this is the right one or not.
This is J2BS.